And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just something I've noticed. Bargain hunting is back. I mean, bargain hunting's always been around. We always love a great deal. But man, everywhere you look, people are bargain hunting. You know, there's so many great ways to find great deals. Hey, I have a great find in your bargain hunting journey. Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby, and truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price that's a real bargain when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That is a bargain. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Uniden America Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, we are Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. And we're everywhere around the world, too. Online. All right, so just, I like to be a helper. I like to help people out. And I know it's tough if you do sports talk or music talk, you know, because the debates can get, the debates on things that aren't really important can sometimes get over the top. And I mentioned before the whole Taylor Swift stuff and on sports, a bunch of different stuff out there, which is at times is like, okay, please stop it. But I have another one. Okay. The ESPN liberal host, for example, can use this. Jemele Hill, she can use this. I did some figuring. Now, Scotty Scheffler, won the golf tournament in South Carolina yesterday, won the Masters last week. He's won four out of his five last tournaments. His caddy, as of yesterday, now I'm rounding this off, his caddy, remember, Noonan from Caddyshack. His caddy, well, it's not really Noonan from Caddyshack.
No.
It's not Michael O'Keefe. That's not it. His caddy, and we're not even through half the year.
Mm-hmm.
We've only played one major, has won $1.8 million. And I say one because he's part of the team of Scotty Scheffler. So
right.
And Scheffler always says, "My team, yes, we've succeeded." $1.8 million. Caitlin Clark only $76,000. A caddy has made 24 times more than a WNBA player. Discuss. I'd love to be.
Well, I think it's time. I think it's time that radio people make as much as anyone else, actually.
We can do that next time, you know, for our next contract talks. Get our agent. Look, maybe you can go to the management and say, these guys should make more than a caddy.
Right. You can have that.
Could we please raise their salary to that of a WNBA player?
Please?
Please.
Well, they said please, so they used the magic word.
I can see I'm going to get an email. You guys only make $76,000? I wish.
If you combine it.
If you combine
over
both
over a period of years.
Yes. Over a period of a decade, possibly.
I just signed a $76,000 contract.
Why do you think our number one topic is inflation?
Exactly. You're killing me.
That guy's going to call us up again and go, you guys stop it. You're billionaires. Remember that guy that said,
oh, yeah.
We actually got a call a couple of years ago. You guys are billionaires.
Yeah.
You know what? There's some leeway if you want to make, you know, lifetime savings of somebody who's our age. I'm not referring to ourselves, but you could, you know, say millionaires from a million in total assets on up above, but a billionaire?
Yeah. If I work till I'm 97, 8, somewhere in there. And I finally get that big WNBA raise.
Then I may be a millionaire.
Then I might, over a period of a lifetime. Yeah. The whole billionaire thing was like, we're a billionaire.
And the guy was serious. That was the thing. He wasn't joking. He was like.
Right. Now, he's horrible at math, but he was serious.
He now works for the Treasury Department. He's the head of calculating the debt.
Right. He's the one that came up with the whole transient thing. Transitory.
Transitory, the three different levels of inflation.
I thought my career was going to be transitory. I thought I'd have a job by now.
Mine was.
Yeah.
As our friend Richard came up with the three classifications of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they came up with the first one, transitory.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came up with permatory.
Mm-hmm.
And then his latest, suppository.
Yeah. Which is true. Hey. I'm not going to say that's exactly what it feels like, but that's exactly what it feels like.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com and use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's Just Something I've Noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
All right. Speaking of billionaires, what's going to happen? I mean, what's going to happen to the Ivy League colleges? Eric, they can't change what they are, can they?
No. What does happen? You know, it's not like this semester is going to end and then all of a sudden, you know, the summer goes by and we come back in the fall and everything's just hunky-dory. No. No, this is cultural, it deeply embedded into the culture of these campuses. And I don't see any reversal in our lifetime. Now, it may be the case that fewer people go there and they're scrambling for money, but tell me what liberal administration or liberal Congress wouldn't want to, you know, hand out more money. I mean, this is exactly what they're doing now. So,
well, you have billionaire donors like Robert Kraft, owner of the New England Patriots, and Leon Cooperman, who are weighing their support for Columbia University. Friction at Columbia has escalated in recent days amid reports of anti-Semitic speech on and around campus. Not just anti-Semitic speech, pro-terrorist speech. where students have set up a tent encampment to protest Israel. Kraft, who has donated millions to the school, condemned the protest on Monday after hours after the Columbia president announced that classes would be held virtually to de-escalate the situation on the campus. Quote, "I am not comfortable supporting the university until corrective action is taken," Kraft said in a statement. "It is my hope that Columbia and its leadership will stand up to this hate by ending these protests immediately and will work to earn back the respect and trust of the many of us who have lost faith in the institution." Now, that's why I asked the question. Well, it doesn't matter if they clear the campus. They're not going to stop with it. We have said, and thanks to somebody who showed an example of DEI being sued and said, you guys have talked about this. Yeah, I mean, DEI will eventually be gone because of lawsuits.
Right.
The philosophy will still exist, I believe, on the college campuses, but the practice of DEI in its form of teaching critical race theory and or, which is, again, the part of critical race theory that whites are culturally racist to the point where it might as well be in their DNA and all society must be structured that way, you won't be able to actually use that as a policy and or teach that or make it, you know, something that is required that an employee must agree with. But it's going to be gone from practice because of lawsuits.
It will.
The federal law is clear on that.
It will. I have no doubt that it will survive and move on as a part of what it's always been, and that is indoctrination. You know, the unofficial part of it where it doesn't come with any level of enforcement. It is more of, okay, we'll just teach this to be the fact.
Yeah.
And we don't need to do anything in terms of any kind of direct policy. We'll just teach it as if it's, you know, sky is blue, grass is green. By the way, if it is still the case that the sky identifies as blue and the grass still identifies as green.
And so it's going to survive in academia. But you see, I mean, there's already, I was reading a story yesterday, more young people turning to tools and not college. We've already seen a reduction in the enrollment of many colleges today. But you just wonder, it's the same thing with the radical transgender movement. You know, it's the it's out there now.
Yeah.
And now that it's out there, it's not going to go away. It may be suppressed in popular culture because our popular culture rejects it because of its misogyny. But it's still going to be there. These concepts that the left embraces is not going away. And so you ask, what happens to these Ivy League schools? What happens? We've stated this about the Democratic Party. How does the Democratic Party eventually change? They can't go on with what they're preaching. I thought they would make a turn in 2018. I was wrong completely. They have doubled down. They've quadrupled down. They have become so much more radical than they even were in 2018. I mean, promoting concepts that are not based in any type of critical thinking or truth, it's just, it's pretty mind-boggling where they have gone and gotten the mainstream media to agree with the agenda, colleges to agree with the agenda, corporations to agree with the agenda. Now the backlash is coming in the form of lawsuits. There's always ebbs and flows in a free society, but you just wonder where it is going to be, where the Democratic Party is going to go. How do they change? How do they revert back? You and I mentioned the Roy Teixeira article and then the article in thehill.com from Douglas Schoen, where they said their advice to the Democratic Party, you know, they may say it, you know, it doesn't go this far, but it was communicated to me. They need to become MAGA.
Yeah, right.
When Douglas Schoen wrote on thehill.com, oh, I think it was Douglas Schoen, I forgot which one it was, that came out and said, that the Democratic Party has to promote secure borders, a wall,
right,
or more barriers. You and I looked at each other and went, okay, we are on drugs. Somebody is slipping us something, because this cannot be coming from any Democrat analyst that the Democratic Party needs to endorse a wall.
Yeah.
And that was just part of it that they were talking about. You know, the identity politics has to go away. But the whole party is built on victim and oppressor.
Yep. Yep.
And so victims are labeled and the oppressors are all labeled. There are no individuals that they wish to exist inside there. There are simply individuals that agree that you judge all groups. You stereotype all groups. You don't judge a person individually. How do they go against that? How do they completely reverse it and say, we're going to be the party that promotes individualism and autonomy?
I don't see any way of, again, turning that around. Because what happens inevitably if there's any dissent at all within the ranks? Yeah. Because that's where the turnaround would have to start. Well, that person or persons are singled out and they are severed from the entire movement, and then they're targeted. You know, that's the way these individuals act. This is how they behave. And we're seeing it right now.
Well, you're seeing it with so many Democrats trying to play both sides. Of, well, we need to listen to the side that's pro-terrorist. They have a, you know, they've got a point. No, they don't.
No.
And
no,
this is where they've reached the point of not being able to convince the public. So they try to play both sides of it, but that's not going to work. That's not going to work for them, because you see the sympathies, for example, Colombia, and the president was trying to say, you know, they're moving away with it. You know, we're going to really clamp down. And they didn't clamp down.
No.
Nope. Then they regretted clamping down. And it's like, okay, no, now we need to allow them to be free, because this is about free speech. Think about how, saw an article that said, you know, 40 years ago, death to America was said not in the United States.
Right.
It was said in a Iranian protest.
Right.
And then we saw it around the world, death to America. Now it's right in the heart of the United States.
Right.
Death to America has now become a rallying cry of a significant portion of people on the left in this country.
Right.
Anti-Semitism has been embraced by a significant portion of the Democratic Party, including the Biden administration.
And they need, they've signaled now officially, they've said it. They need that vote. They want that vote.
They've got to have, they need the terrorist vote. They need the pro-terrorist vote in order to win the election by what they're saying and by their behavior.
In the past, it would be the media calling on them to disavow. No.
Yeah.
And it's not the radicals endorsing Biden. It's Biden, the candidate,
endorsing
the radicals.
Yep. And that's why this election is so hard to figure out, because so many things have changed. You know, you said it earlier. I don't want to put words into your mouth. I don't even want to paraphrase you. I want you to say it when you were talking about, we were talking about people out there that they're sort of stunned because they, you didn't use the word stunned. They're just sort of in a fog because they sort of can't believe everything that they see every day.
Right. No, I think they are. And I'm not I can't remember how I phrased it earlier.
Yeah.
But I think there's a significant number of people, and we can expand on this here after the break. But there's a significant number of people out there that look at this and they're wondering what in the world is going on. But if you're one of these standby people and you're just watching it, and you've tolerated the extremism up until now, well, there is no more of that. Because the longer you stand by and do nothing about it and keep voting for the same side that is now endorsing this radical behavior, the more you're a part of it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This morning's USDA Farm Report is brought to you by Howe's Products. Tested, trusted, guaranteed since 1920.
Despite some spring storms over some Midwest growing areas, soils remain fairly dry and warm.
And that, combined with warm spring weather, has led to fairly rapid planting and emergence progress, as well as winter grain development.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says just about any way you look at it, this has been a fast-paced planting season, no doubt.
Yeah, you look at the big picture, just about everything is going into the ground ahead of average. With a few exceptions, we see emergence pretty much at or ahead of schedule. And that is, again, a consistent message across the country.
Perfect example, corn planting.
We saw a doubling of the corn planting progress for the week ending April 21st, from 6% a week ago to 12% on April 21st. That remains ahead of the five-year average pace of 10%.
Also, soybean planting at 8% is twice what it was a year ago. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This report brought to you by Cenex Fuels and Lubes.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara. Why it's always important to have a follow-up question to the press department of the White House.
Mm.
Give you an example of what happened yesterday, and it was pretty interesting. And also NYU University, just looking at this headline here, Eric from Fox News, NYU requested NYPD to gain control of disorderly anti-Israel protests. Did not need to lead to this. Just wonder how far it's going to be expanding here over the next few days.
Mm.
And we'll tell you why we believe there's a good chance it will expand.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Uniden America Studios.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Now, what did you say Kennedy is doing, Robert Kennedy Jr.?
It says, I'm going to put the entire U.S. budget on blockchain, which is basically kind of this transparent ledger kind of thing for the entire budget. Yeah, no, you're not. Number one, you won't be president. Number two, that's not going to happen. But it's an attempt to appeal to the crypto crowd and to sound hip. Let's just stop.
Well, it does sound better than I will put Social Security in a lockbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah, when Forrest Gump was running. I remember that. I may not be a smart man, but I know what Social Security abuse is. It's a sad, it really is a sad attempt at trying to seem hip. But that's who he's trying to go for. You know, all these people that are going, oh, I'm not voting for that guy or that guy. I'm voting for RFK Jr. And then they, you know, go on to tell you how much of a conservative they are.
And how would putting the budget on blockchain,
yeah,
solve anything?
It wouldn't, because you would assume people, even if you could do it, you can't. Even if you could do it, you know, people would have essentially have access and see where the money is going. You're acting as if people would be interested in seeing where the money is going.
Yeah.
We can see this through our elected representatives, and nobody's looking. Nobody cares. Right now,
yeah.
What would change about the caring of it?
I know where it's going now. It doesn't take that long to figure it out.
Right.
If you're interested, it's...
Right.
This isn't like it's a mystery.
No.
you know, the budgets out there all the time. We know how much we spend on what. So
right.
I don't know. Okay.
Well, you know, that's the other thing too. If you wanted to get into the minutia of, all right, this is, I mean, again, the silly conversation about something that's not going to happen. But if you wanted to get into a blockchain type of ledger system for the budget, then you start breaking it down. To me, actually, I think a lot of liberals would love that. You know why? Because you get into the minutiae of things and then people would really lose interest. Not that they have interest now, but you can say, we spend this much on military spending. Well, you break that down in blockchain fashion, and it's like, we spent $1.26 on this hammer at Shepherd Air Force Base in Texas. We spent $9.40, and then it's like, what? Huh? What? I'm out. When you put the budget stuff out there, like Congress does, and you go back and you do the back and forth, and they say, okay, not that they're spending the way that I want them to spend, but there are only a handful of us conservatives that are really concerned about the whole fiscal mess that we're in right now and the lack of responsibility. So there's the other thing. You know, that's the biggest whole part of it. But we can see it. We are watching it. That's why it's a huge concern to us. He's pretending like it's a concern to other people, and I don't know if he's trying to gain some street cred from, I don't know, the crypto conservatives. I don't know who that would be that he's trying to.
The crypto conservatives. I like that. the crypto conservatives.
That's the name of my next band. And so I don't know who he's trying to gain favor with. But the fact of the matter is that you're saying, well, we should put it out there. It's already out there.
All right. I want to see if I see that anywhere. Some said, well, I got to vote for Kennedy because of his putting it in a lockbox, or not a lockbox.
Mm-hmm. Blockchain, yeah.
Blockchain.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going back to Gore.
Yeah.
The thing is, anybody who is interested, anybody who is criticizing the debt situation in this country that actually cares, knows where the money is going.
Well, okay. I have one number that proves that.
Okay.
That this doesn't go anywhere with the overwhelming majority of Americans. And that number would be $33 trillion.
I thought it's 34.
34. Hey, hold on. That was at the beginning of the show.
Okay.
35 trillion. We don't care.
No.
I mean, our audience does. Well, we do, but we're a small, small part of it.
Well, we looked at that latest poll that came out that showed only 2%. If you talk about the top problem, 2% say the federal debt, yet you have on the economy and inflation, 25%,
mm-hmm.
which means people are concerned about inflation. Where do you think inflation is coming from?
Right.
The spending and the debt.
Right.
So there is more of a realization of it, but not enough a realization of it that, you know, we still want to spend. Well, we can still afford to do that. Well, everything that you've felt in inflation is directly because of that. What?
I made the joke that it was 34 trillion when the show started. It's 34.5 trillion. No.
No? Okay. All right. I want to play this audio because last night we played. The only clip I had was the first question. This was when, and I'm playing this for a reason. This is where Pete Ducey asked Karine Jean-Pierre, why is President Biden saying that his uncle Bossy was eaten by cannibals? And she goes into a long explanation. He did have a follow-up question. We did ask that yesterday. What was the follow-up, or was there a follow-up? There was. And it shows you the value of a follow-up with the incompetent people in the White House, because she's not even prepared to answer the first question. You make a follow-up, and she proceeds to lie.
Yeah, right.
And that's what you wish to do. That's how you shake them up. But here it is when Pete Ducey asked the question a couple of days ago. Here we go.
Why is President Biden saying that his uncle Bossy was eaten by cannibals.
So, you know, I answered this question yesterday. I believe I've seen some clips on your network about me answering this question. I don't have much to say beyond what I said to some of your colleagues. Look, I was there. I think you traveled with us, too, to Pennsylvania. I'm not sure if you were there at the memorial in Scranton. The president had a emotional and I think a symbolic moment. He had an opportunity as president to honor his uncle's service in uniform. He had an opportunity to be there as president to speak to the bravery of his uncle, and not just his uncle, but many U.S. service members that put their lives on the line on behalf of this country. So his uncle, who lost his life when the military aircraft he was on crashed in the Pacific after taking off near New Guinea, the president highlighted his uncle's story as he made the case for honoring our sacred commitment to equip those we send to war and take care of them and their families when they come home. And as he iterated, the last thing American veterans are, or the last thing Americans are, should be called, are suckers and losers. And that is, those types of words should not come from a commander in chief, as we have in the past. And we should actually be lifting up our American veterans and honoring them. And that's
okay. That was the follow-up question,
right?
Because he asked that question twice. That was the follow-up. And you saw where she said suckers and losers. He got her to lie by asking the follow-up. That was the follow-up.
Right.
Okay, because he asked the initial one. Then he asked the same question again. Well, why did he, you know, and that was a follow-up. And she used the suckers and losers. That never happened.
Nope, never happened. It was a lie when Biden said it the other day.
Yep.
It was a lie when they first said it. It was a lie when he said it the other day. It was a lie when she said it. And yet, you know, you can still get away with the massive lies. And you have to ask yourself, why do you have to lie about those things?
Because
on the issues, you can't beat them. You can't beat your opponent on the issues.
Well, you also don't have any record of him actually saying anything blatantly racist.
Right. Well,
so you
Charlottesville.
Have, yeah, the Charlottesville. And well, the Charlottesville for the racists and you and the soldiers, you're trying to make Biden seem like he's the patriot and Trump is not by stating something that Trump never said. So patriotism and racism, they're trying to get the lead. Biden's never going to get the lead on that, but that's their attempt. That's their weak attempt,
yeah,
to up the president on racism and say the, you know, that that Trump is the racist. And Trump is the one that hates the troops.
So if you're keeping score, the guy who endorses the Death to America crowd is the patriotic one.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want you to believe. And that's where we are. I mean, I'm always curious to see what the results of any election cycle are, but my gosh, November 5th of this yeah. year, November 6th of next year, when they finally get all the results in, I can't wait to see where we are, because it is a crossroads. Either nothing much changes politically in how people vote, which means it is absolutely carte blanche for the left to keep doing everything and more, or we put a stop to this madness with a massive, 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 massive message politically, and that would be a significant win for Trump, landslide or not. I don't know how it's going to go. It's going to be, if it's close even, and Trump ekes out a win, the left will take that as, okay, we almost won, and we're going to keep doing what we're doing.
The polls do not show, I mean, some of the overall polls, you see movement in some demographics.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see a landslide of Americans rejecting what's coming from the left yet.
Right.
Not in the – it might be there. And maybe the election in November will be it. But you don't see it yet. There are tons of Americans that endorse the left in this country that endorse – they may be quiet, but they endorse what's going on. They endorse the anti-Semitism. They endorse the pro-terrorist message of the Democrat Party. Now, it hasn't changed how they will vote, according to the polls, yet. Will it? All the insanity that we see. You know, they say, people say, well, we care about the debt. Then you ask them, well, the level of importance, not big, but inflation is. Yeah, but the debt is what's causing inflation. The spending which causes the debt is the reason we have the inflation today. End of story. Every major problem we have is because of the Democratic Party in control on the federal level.
Every day, we spend $2.4 billion on interest, according to the Debt Clock website. Now, go back to 2016, and the wall that Trump wanted to build was $25 billion. Right now, we surpassed that in 10 and a half days in just interest on the national debt alone.
And that's today. It probably keeps going up.
Exactly.
Tomorrow it'll be 2.403, and it just keeps going up.
Exactly. And it's every 10 days, 10 and a half days, we're spending that on just the interest on the national debt.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara. Well, I just saw the story right now. Why Kamala Harris's laugh has sparked concerns from Democrats as they rush to turn around their dire approval ratings. Wow. The Democratic National Committee has conducted focus groups on Kamala Harris, according to a new CNN report, to understand why voters do not like her. Some voters in the focus group said they do not like Harris, specifically citing her laugh as criticism.
Look, we've talked about how optics are a huge part of the political landscape. And the laughter is different in that it's not just kind of, you know, off-putting, but it's also that it's indicative of this nervous thing that she has. It's a nervous laughter. It's also dismissive.
When you laugh at your own joke, when there's not really a joke.
Well, when she was on that tarmac and it was a very serious topic and the media came up and then she's laughing and it's like, wait, whoa, this is a very serious moment. What are you laughing about? You know? Yeah. It is weird.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets Podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going?
Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.